from the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, this is All About Grants.
Welcome to another edition of All About Grants. My name is Megan Columbus. I'm with the NIH Office of Extramural Research. As many of you know, the NIH Office of Extramural Research is responsible for the framework. That's the infrastructure for NIH grant programs. And that includes grant policies and compliance, grant systems, data and analyses, and who and what NIH funds. Today's podcast is about the Freedom of Information Act, also known as FOIA. And that's as it pertains to information maintained by OER. I'd like to welcome Dr. Maggie Schneider, OER's FOIA coordinator, and Pat Brown, who's been with us before, who's the director of the Office of Laboratory Animal Welfare. So Maggie, let's start. What is the Freedom of Information Act?
The Freedom of Information Act, often referred to, as you mentioned, FOIA, is a legislatively mandated tool that allows the public to find out about the activities of the federal government. It gives them the rights to obtain copies of records in the government's possession.
So then who's subject to FOIA?
All the federal agencies are subject to FOIA. However, Congress, in passing the legislation, exempted themselves. The personal staff of the president is exempted, as well as the federal courts.
So does FOIA then apply to state governments as well?
The federal FOIA has no bearing on state agencies or on private entities, but all or nearly all of the states have a state equivalent to FOIA. It sometimes is called Freedom of Information, or it can be called State Sunshine Act or State Open Records Law. Today, we are only talking about the Federal Freedom of Information Act, particularly as it applies to NIH and more specifically to OER.
Okay, so tell me, who can file a FOIA?
We are required to respond to any person, including non-citizens and non-residents within the U.S., who will submit a written request that reasonably describes the records they seek.
When you say reasonably describes, what do you mean by that?
Let me answer that by using two examples. The first is not a reasonably described request. For example, someone says, "Give me everything you have on cancer." We have grant information data, we have correspondence data about grants that conduct research on various treatments for different cancers, RCDC, and our list of possible records can continue on and on. However, if someone says, "I'd like to have a list of all institutions or organizations currently doing breast cancer research in South Dakota," the titles of the grants, the names and addresses of the principal investigators of those grants, we have a reasonably described request.
Okay, so it needs to be a very specific request.
Yes.
I noticed that you said anyone may submit a request for a record. What constitutes a record, then?
NIH records include documents, such as correspondence, grant applications, documentary materials, such as photographs, videos, data, information in electronic format, such as emails. Everything we have is subject to FOIA, but not everything is releasable, even though it's considered a record.
When you say not everything's releasable, what do you mean?
When FOIA was enacted, it was noted by the Congress, and I quote, "A democracy works best when the people have all the information that the security of the nation permits," end of quote. But it goes on to say, more direct to your response, "At the same time, the welfare of the nation or the rights of individuals may require that some documents not be made available." Congress provided 9 exemptions that protect certain records from disclosure. 4 exemptions that are used most commonly for OER information are, the first being Exemption 4, trade secrets and commercial or financial information. And there we withhold trade secrets or financial information that's obtained from a person, and we consider it privileged or confidential.
I'm sure our applicants will be relieved to hear that.
If a grantee is placed in a position where NIH is asking them to review their grant application in response to a FOIA request, they need to consider the fact that if the information is already public, such as in a recent publication, then it shouldn't be protected under FOIA.
Great, good to know.
Exemption 5 is interagency or intra-agency memoranda, or the documents that incorporate certain privileges, such as attorney-client or deliberative process. This includes aspects of the review of grant applications, such as priority scores. A good example of this exemption is when NIH, or for that matter, any agency, is developing a new policy. Emails are flying between multiple offices as ideas are being vetted, and the statement of the proposed new policy is wordsmithed. It's recognized that the reviewers need to be able to be candid and not have their opinions or comments made public. Exemption 6 is one that allows protection of information that would constitute an invasion of personal privacy if disclosed. For example, personnel actions. Exemption 7 protects certain information in law enforcement files that are currently under investigation, that is, where the investigation is an open case.
So this might be cases where there's a criminal action related to a grant that's been referred to the Department of Justice, for example?
Yes, it applies to those cases, too, as well as we'll be hearing from Pat about how it applies to the Office of Laboratory Animal Welfare's noncompliance records when they are open cases.
I know new applicants are often interested in getting a copy of a successful grant application, and that's to inform their own kind of grant writing activities. Can I get this information through FOIA? And is that possible, and is it the best way to go?
NIH does have a couple of sample grant applications available online. Just do a search for NIH sample grant applications and you'll find them. If you want a copy of a grant that might be more in line with your research, then I'd recommend you go to the NIH's reporter tool and search for a funded grant that is similar to your own scientific interests. Following this, you have two choices. The simplest approach is to ask the PI for the funded grant whether they would share a copy of their successful grant application. Megan, you have a whole podcast on grant writing, don't you?
We do. We've got a number of podcasts related to grant writing. You can just do a search for NIH All About Grants podcasts, and you should find it.
The second choice for obtaining a copy of a grant application is to make a FOIA request to the FOIA coordinator for the institute or center that's funding the grant. Included should be your name and mailing address, including the institutional affiliation, and what is specifically being requested. For grants, I'd recommend providing a grant number, though it doesn't hurt to add the title and PI name as well. Before we can release any application, we need to redact anything that might be protected under the law, such as trade secrets or confidential information, like we mentioned before. Your letter or email will be sent to the principal investigator as part of NIH effort to determine if there is any intellectual property or trade secrets that should be protected within the materials requested. So your request will not be anonymous. And the version of the application that we provide to you may have large chunks blocked out, so that while you are welcome to ask for an application under FOIA, we really recommend you approach the PI directly.
What if I want to see what an unsuccessful grant application looks like? Can I get a copy of an unsuccessful grant?
Oh, no. We consider the unfunded application to be intellectual property of the PI's institution. As you and most of our listeners know too well, NIH is not able to support all the grant applications that are being sent to us, though many unfunded applications are meritorious. It is very possible the application may be revised and submitted again to NIH or supported by another funder.
NIH supports transparency in lots of ways. We support and comply with the Freedom of Information Act, certainly. We also have a long history of being very transparent about our funding. Report, which is at report.nih.gov, is an amazing tool developed by NIH that allows the public insight into who and what NIH funds. Note that we only provide information on funded grants there, and so no information is provided to the public on unfunded applications, either through FOIA or through Report, but we do provide summary information on unfunded applications in many of our reports and analyses, which you can also find on Report. So Maggie, I believe you have a process whereby you identify reports or information that are frequently requested through FOIA, and then you proactively make that information public. Is that correct?
Yes. We post frequently requested reports in the NIH FOIA library, which can be found at the NIH FOIA website.
So, Pat, I haven't forgotten about you. There are some instances where institutions who correspond with the federal government really should think about what they include in that documentation. One area where we get frequent FOIA requests for is reports of noncompliance to the Office of Laboratory Animal Welfare. I'd like to ask you, as director of the office, if you have any advice for our institutions regarding correspondence with OLA.
For those of you who might be responsible for submitting noncompliance reports to OLA, I'd like to mention that while OLA is a federal office committed to FOIA's mandatory disclosure procedures, there have been situations where unnecessary information was included in a report of noncompliance to OLA, and this information was misused for targeted harassment of the lab animal community, scientists, and research facilities.
And that's something the NIH never condones.
Absolutely. In order to maintain proper reporting while minimizing the risk of possible security breaches, I'd like to highlight the mandatory pieces of information required to be included in a final noncompliance report to OLA. First, the name of the institution and its assurance number with OLA should be included. Next, the reporting requirement of the PHS policy under which the incident qualifies. Is it a serious or continuing noncompliance with the PHS policy itself? Is it a serious deviation from the guide for the care and use of laboratory animals? Or is it a suspension of an activity by the Institutional Animal Care and Use Committee? Whichever of these the incident qualifies for should be included. Third, if a preliminary report was made, the final report should note when, by whom, and to whom a preliminary report had been submitted. Next is an explanation of the incident itself. The report should explain in detail what happened, when and where, the species of animals involved, and the category of the individuals involved, but not their names. For example, the report should state that a technician forgot to check a water bottle or the principal investigator failed to provide instructions on the schedule for postoperative analgesics to a new research assistant.
So I think the key thing that you just said there is we really want to know what happened. We really don't want to know the specific about the name of the person that's involved because that becomes a security risk.
That's right, Megan. Next in the report are the corrective and preventative actions taken to address the situation. The report should include all the short or long-term corrective plans, along with the implementation schedule. The report should indicate whether the IACUC reviewed and accepted the corrective actions submitted by the responsible party, and any ongoing actions taken by the Animal Care and Use Committee, such as enhanced oversight. Next, you should make sure that the relevant grant or contract number for NIH or other public health service or National Science Foundation supported activities is included. The report should describe any potential or actual effect on federally supported activities. This also applies to incidents that have occurred in a functional, programmatic, or physical area not supported by NIH or NSF that could affect the public health service or NSF supported activities. Lastly, if the incident did involve public health service or National Science Foundation supported activities and was not compliant with the terms and conditions of the grant award, the report must confirm that the situation was reported to the funding component and that all unauthorized costs initially paid from the grant have been removed and have been covered by other sources. Or alternatively, The report must certify that there were no unallowable costs charged during the noncompliant period. I'd like to emphasize again that there's no need to identify individuals by name. OLA is assessing the adequacy of the institution's response to a noncompliant situation. There also is no need to identify the individuals by name that investigated the incident. Instead, their general titles, such as Chair of the Animal Care and Use Committee, Attending or Clinical Veterinarian, or members of the Post-Approval Monitoring Office, can be the description provided.
Great advice. Thank you. Maggie, getting down to specific how and who, I know each NIH institute and center has a FOIA officer. What type of information would someone come to OER for as opposed to one of the other FOIA offices?
As noted earlier, requests for grants or any information related to a specifically funded grant should be directed to the FOIA coordinator for the institute or center funding that grant. OER will handle requests for assurances in non-compliance situations, as Pat just discussed, for the Office of Laboratory Animal Welfare. We also respond to requests for summary data for NIH grant funding and other topics specific to overall NIH activities.
And then what's a proper way to submit a FOIA request?
A request can be submitted electronically or on paper. Emails requests should contain the name and mailing address of the requester, no P.O. boxes, please, and if it is on behalf of an institution or organization, the name and telephone number of that institution or organization, and then a description of the records sought in reasonable detail, as we talked about earlier. This should be sent to OER FOIA. A list of all FOIA coordinators can be found at the NIH FOIA website. If you search for NIH FOIA, you will find it on the web.
Thank you, Maggie. For either of you, are there any closing thoughts for our audience?
Yes, please. FOIA is a request for documents in the possession of the U.S. government. We cannot provide what we don't have. We are not allowed to create a report specifically to respond to a FOIA request. It's important that the request indicate what document or specific data you are requesting and not what questions you want answered. Also, FOIA may not be free. Fees are assessed. Best way to find out if this will happen is check the NIH FOIA website for additional details.
Well, thanks to you both for sharing with us today. For NIH and OER, this is Megan Columbus.
To get more information about NIH's Freedom of Information Act, please visit www.nih.gov and search for NIH FOIA. Once again, that's NIH FOIA.